One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Momai Gutavi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rumble, band.video, Vigilante TV, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. If you haven't rated the show yet, hopefully you will do that and give us 5 stars. If you think we've earned it, I think we have, but that's going to be up to you. If you want to connect with me, the website is macroaggressions.io. activistpost.com, naturalblaze.com. Get your news there, bookmark it, go check it out. We appreciate our sponsors who helped to make this show happen. If it wasn't for Tim James and the crew over at Chemical Free Body, I probably wouldn't be doing this podcast any longer. They have been with me from the beginning. I appreciate them. They make fantastic products that actually work. If you're somebody that wants supplements, you want to do something positive for your body, but you're not really sure where to turn because you know that the industry is very scammy, well, Chemical Free Body is a great place to take a look. You can find Tim James's podcast there. You can listen to him. He's been on here more than anybody, more than any guest that we've had. So hopefully you know him by now. They're making outstanding products that work. The 90-day detox bundle is fantastic, and you can find out everything you want to know about it. Just go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. And you'll find information about the detox bundles, Green 85, workshops. You can partner up with Tim James and he'll work with you directly. Whatever it is, if you want to improve the quality of your life, Tim's the guy to talk to. He literally saved his life by changing his diet and he can help you out too. So go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro and check it out. And also, I hope you don't need this product, but the guys over at EMP Shield are building the best EMP shielding device in existence. In fact, the military asked them for some tips on how to build theirs a little bit better. It works on your home. It works on your car. If you've got a boat or an RV, it'll work on those. It'll work on a generator. It's pretty handy. It connects like with 3 wires, just like a type 2 surge protector. You can install it yourself. There's installation videos on their website. You can find it on YouTube and hook it all up. So if you're interested, it's many times more efficient than a single-use military design. It can handle up to 40 EMP strikes. So go to empshield.com and take a look. See what they've got. They've got these little devices over there. You can check them out. And if you find something that you like, the promo code is MACRO. That'll save you some money on your way out. And I hope you don't need it, but you're probably better off having it and not using it than the other way around. Oh, and by the way, for more practical things, if it works on lightning strikes as well, and also, you know, various items. So EMPShield.com/macro. Check it, or EMPShield.com, and then just promo code macro, I should say. Well, have you seen Barnum World yet? How dare you? You guys haven't done it. I mean, it's free. It's available. Ladies and gentlemen, back to discuss it, the director of not just Jones Plantation, but now the new mockumentary Barnum World. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, Drew Treglia. Hello, Drew. Good to see you again.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Well, you done went out and made another movie, didn't you? And it didn't even really cost you all that much. I'm surprised at how efficient you are with the budget, man. Holy shit. Can we talk a little bit about making Barnum World?
If I could get $1 to $5 million for a film, I could make a film that looks like $30 million, $40 million.
I bet
just
you could.
Learning how to do everything, getting bang for my buck, making a dollar out of a dime.
Yeah,
it'd be nice. It'd be nice, but yeah, this one was Indiegogo all the way, and we made a promise in the beginning in the Indiegogo campaign that we were going to give this one away. And originally it was supposed to be a regular documentary, and Legal Man was going to do the voiceover. And that all changed, and now it's a mockumentary, and we created this character, Natty Jones, and he comes in and does a tell-all. He's a Hollywood propagandist, has been his whole life, was even groomed into it. And he tells the truth that, you know, about the system that, it runs on lies through mind control, brainwashing, social engineering, and propaganda. And it's the whole system is just a control system and a scam. And it's not what you think it is. It's not this freedom machine that you believe it is. And all of that freedom machine, all of that belief system is perpetuated through propaganda, mind control, brainwashing, and social engineering. It's the mock. We're calling it the mockumentary to end all documentaries,
dude. It's the brainwash. The movie's fantastic. Everyone, go see it. It's available for free on YouTube and Rumble
for
and
now.
Yeah. Where else?
It's on BitChute and Odyssey, and I'm gonna get it on Amazon. Hopefully, Prime, like free Prime if you have Prime. And I haven't. Distributor, technically like an aggregator, they just basically just put it out. So I'm going to give it to them, and hopefully they can spread it out to like all of the sort of free with ad platforms. I'm going to get them in as many platforms as I can. The only reason why I haven't gotten it on Amazon and the others I just mentioned yet, like Roku and stuff, is just because I needed to get the key art done for that. I didn't need that for YouTube and stuff. I could just throw it up there. I wanted to get it up, but like I just sent you earlier the poster, so. Yeah. Once I get the poster done, then I can actually upload it to all these other platforms. Because I'm worried about YouTube. I'm very worried about YouTube. It's constant copyright this, copyright that, and I'm constantly fighting with them to the point where, and it irritates me because I hear they're running a ton of ads and they're not paying me anything for them. So they made it ineligible, but they're still running ads on the film, which is obnoxious to say the least. So, but that's the main place to see it is YouTube right now.
Yeah, but as we know, we have to plant flags multiple places because they'll take your YouTube channel down just for for too much truth. Boy, I tell you, the best way to deliver bad news to the general public, I think, is through humor. This movie's hilarious. In some parts, unintentionally hilarious. Just like society, it's just, you know, so much of it is just you holding up a mirror to like. Show what society is, and it's funny.
A broken
and
mirror.
Sad. Yeah, very broken mirror, and it's disgusting. Yeah. But what are you gonna do? I mean, people can't shake their fist at you for putting this out. You're just, or Natty Jones's character, even. I mean, you want to hate him in the movie, right? Because he's a Hollywood guy. He's one of those, like, you know, you think like Hollywood big shot sleazebag type of guy, but. And you expect him to just be totally full of shit and all this stuff. And the thing is, he's not. He's as honest as can be. That's kind of the problem, is that you want to hate him, but hate you know, don't hate the player, I suppose, hate the game, because he's just explaining how it works. And he's, and frankly, he's being a bit on, maybe even too honest about it in this. I love the character that wound up coming out of this. How much of it was you and how much of it was Lee? Because I know the two of you guys together are just diabolical.
Well, this is a very funny question. I need to talk to him because at the premiere, he started going telling people that he came up with it and I agreed, and that's not what happened. Just so you understand. I came up with the idea. He wisely was, whoa, hold on a second. What do you mean? What are you talking about? What are you talking about, this idea? And then he finally agreed. And the story he told about how he came up with it because he thought it could, the jester doesn't get killed, right? That came after he then agreed. And then we decided this is a good idea. And then we're like, this is going to be really good because this will keep us from getting attacked because it's a comedy.
Right.
I need to talk to him about that because luckily I handled it well that night. I disputed him, but I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I wonder if he actually believes that. I don't know. I just think logically who would end up, we do have a great, and by the way, I would have been happy to just say, we both came up with it in the room because basically we did both come up with it. I mean, it doesn't matter who had the first idea when we collaborate, you know, it all came because he agreed to do the film. We were at his house brainstorming. That's how these things happen. It doesn't matter who's first, who's second. And I would have never said anything about it except for he brought it up with the screening in front of a room full of people. It's all good. I'm not mad about it or anything. But just think logically, who would be the chaos guy, big ideas guy, and who would be the prudent, calm guy? Would Legal Man be like, I got this idea. Let's throw a wrench in the engine and create this mockumentary and forget what we were talking about. You know, that's me all day. But it doesn't matter. I mean, at the end of the day, it was both. I mean, it happened because of our collaboration. We do collaborate very well. And
you do.
Hopefully that'll continue.
And in some regards, almost reading each other's minds when it came to the swimsuit.
Yeah. Yeah. I sent him a picture of the swimsuit I wanted, and he literally sent me back his cart and Amazon with the exact same swimsuit on it. So yeah, I'm one step ahead of you, buddy. I already got it.
He had already bought the swim. You sent a picture of a red, white, and blue American flag Speedo type swimsuit
Speedo
that you thought would be a great for him, and he sends you back a response, which is that it had already been purchased in advance, like a day earlier.
Yeah, we're on the same page.
He's
fantastic. By the way, he's fantastic in the film, in my humble opinion. Now, everybody might have a different opinion.
I have a different opinion. I have a separate opinion, and it is in agreement with you. He is fantastic in this. I swear to God, he should have been, well, he could be whatever he wants, of course, but had he chosen earlier on in life that he wanted to get into acting, he's as good of an actor as I've seen in a movie as anybody, any hardcore professional spent my entire life, going to art school and acting classes and things like that. Man, he absolutely kills it. I think in part because he relates to that character. Like, I think he can understand who that guy was. And it was like, just channel this Hollywood sleazebag. Well, what would he say? Well, say what you think he would say, you know, in the way that you think he would say it. The way, like, he delivers dialogue and where he pauses in certain places and does, I don't know.
Very matter of fact. Everything's matter of fact. He says, look, I didn't create the system. I don't even necessarily support the system. But I do perform a very valuable function in the system, and that's why I'm so well taken care of. Yeah. He's like, most people don't. He goes, I'm in the game. Most people don't even know there's a game being played. Yeah. As long as they're playing the game, I'm playing the game. And he's like, I'm going to tell you all of this, and you're like, you're the interviewer in it.
Yeah.
People didn't know, and the narrator, and you're like, why are you telling us all this? Isn't this going to, you know, ruin your little scam? And he's like, nobody's going to listen to you or me. They're not going to do anything about it. They're just, you know, people are far, far, far too far gone to listen to what I have to say. Basically what his take is. So he washes his hands of it. He's like, I'm going to put it out there. You know, I want a record of my time, and I'm going to tell everybody the truth, and they're not going to do anything about it anyway. it's an indictment of the population. Sorry, so to cut you off.
Yeah, this is how it goes in their revelation of the method. You know, you just tell everybody what you're going to do, and if nobody stops you, you go out and do it. I don't know if this is Luciferian sort of codes or whatever it is that they work under, but there is undeniably some component to this where you have to tell the audience what you're going to do, and then you can do it. And I don't know if your sins are magically absolved or.
I think that's actually a thing in the dark occult. What do you want to call it? Satanism, whatever. I mean, I don't know if it's Satanism because I don't think these people actually care about Christianity or I think they just want to be gods. But anyways, but yeah, like you said, there is something I've heard this. There's a name for it. It's like as long as you tell people what you're doing, then you get absolved from it and you're able to go do it. I don't know what they call that, but that is a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's some sort of ritual that they have. And he certainly does tell everybody how the game works. And there's a scene in there where he's on the boat and he's explaining about the party and getting invited to the party, you know, and what that is. And to me, I thought that was so smart because I think people can understand it better at that point. Because you look at Hollywood and you see these celebrities and you go, you've been selling this, you know, story for a long time and that you're still out there working, you know, like that, those pictures of, I don't know, it wasn't Tony Bennett, but it was one of the Paul Anka or some guy who's out there on the stage singing. He's like 100 years old, doesn't know the words, can barely move. And you're like, why is that guy still on the stage? You know, it's like, well, because they have to be, they have to work forever. And so there's in that scene, he explains about the big party that you can never leave. And I thought that was such a great way to connect with the normies, why this club, once you get in, there's no way to get out, right?
Yeah, you're talking about the old guy. I think it was Frankie Valli. That was recently, Frankie, right? He's just like standing there and they're just saying us. That was terrible, man. But you can't, once you're in. Well, that, you know where that came from? That can't, you know, Nick Bryant, right?
Yeah.
He wrote the book, The Franklin Scandal.
Yeah.
And in, I don't know if it was from the Franklin scandal or in his just experiences with these pedophiles and the occult and everything. He met a guy who was a photographer for Compromat, which is they'd bring people in and get them with underage girls, whatever, and he would take the photos. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he was talking to the photographer and he basically asked him that question, like, what's the deal? Like, what's this all about? And the guy said, I don't remember the exact question he asked him, but the guy said the same thing we did, but he used a boat. I'd imagine a big, beautiful yacht, and you get on the yacht, and there's all the drugs and all the money and all the sex you could ever want and all the food. But if you try to leave the yacht, they'll fucking drown you. And so I was like, that needs to be in the film. But we used a big, beautiful castle, magical grounds, you know, all the drugs and sex. But if you went, they'll fucking kill you. That's pretty much it. You know, there's a reason why. And again, we can never know because we're never going to be in these parties, but I think there's a reason why when you see somebody, you know, like a Tom Hanks or somebody, and you're just like, how could this guy just sit here and lie to my face like this, you know? And you're like, oh, okay, these guys are completely and totally captured. They don't have a choice. And who knows what they're threatening them with? Who knows? Yeah. You know, when I see that video of Cash Patel and Dan Bongino, it looks like a hostage video when they're saying Epstein killed himself. And after years of Dan Bongino talking about Epstein, what a joke it is. After years of Cash Patel talking about how he's going to get in there and find out the Epstein list and everything, they do who knows what they told them, you know?
Whatever they told them scared the shit out of them because they changed their story real quick and suddenly there was no there.
You know, sending pictures with their children with their heads chopped off. Maybe there's aliens on the dark side of the moon. They have to go work in the mines. I don't know. But something so bad that they're willing to sell their soul right then and there. No problem.
Yeah, something. So the name of the movie is Barnum World. And in the movie, we talk about Barnum statements. Now, I think people understand kind of like Barnum and Bailey Circus, and maybe they make a connection there. But for those who are unaware, what is a Barnum statement?
Well, a Barnum statement is a statement that sounds very meaningful and very profound, but in fact it's meaningless because it means something different to everyone who hears it. So, and there, the system is run on these things, and they get you emotionally charged, and you think you're a part of something, but it's actually a meaningless, it's an unfalsifiable and unprovable statement. So obviously the one that's probably most prevalent now is Make America Great Again. Oh. That's a Barnum statement. That doesn't mean anything. What if you get Trump 4 years and put him under oath and say, did you make America great again? He's going to say, oh yeah. And they say, okay, define that. What does that mean? And if you have 20 people, you sit them down in a room and say, write down in, you know, 3 to 5 sentences what it means to make America great again. You're going to get 20 different answers. But when you say it, make America great again, yeah, it sounds so profound, you know, but it means nothing. It's meaningless. So when you start to see these everywhere, you start to realize that's how they kind of run the system, because he can't say make America great. You can't say you didn't make America great again. He can always find some way to make excuses or wrap his story up into, you see, I made America great again. It's not falsifiable. It's not provable. It's just something you say, and it's meaningless.
Yeah. Obama had a great one. It wasn't even a statement. It was just a word. He would say it would hope, right? That was hope.
Well, hope and change. Yeah, hope and change is that's the Barnum statement. What does that even mean? Hope and change how? What? Where? For who?
The thing about hope is that it's always in the future, and you never have to deliver on it. You know, it's as long as you have hope, you're looking for it externally, and it's coming at some time to be determined later, but it's definitely not coming now. So when Obama talks about hope, you have hope 40 years from now, but in the next 4 years that I'm running this place, you better hope I don't put you on a list. That's about the only hope that you've got. Hope I don't decide that I want to deport you like he did 2 million people. Nobody was up in arms about that. But of course, when Trump wants to do it, it's a gigantic problem. I personally don't want the state involved in any of this shit. But the idea that there's different.
But they are.
When one guy says it, it's fine. When the other guy says it, I don't know, it's racist or something along those lines. But these statements that people put out there, and then there's a scene in the movie where, had it not been in the movie, I would have talked about this guy anyway, but Gavin Newsom is just Mr. Barnum statement. I mean, that guy hasn't had an original thought in his life, and he is just, you know, straight out of that central casting, slick, you know, buttered toast hair, politician, cocksucker, looks the part, French laundry, all that stuff, comes out there and starts talking about, just starts talking in riddles, essentially. And you grab that scene in the movie, and it's just ding, 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 like everything that comes out of his mouth. And I think it's really important, because after someone sees, they may or may not know what a Barnum statement is, and they may even be a bit fuzzy on the concept of it. But once you watch the movie, you'll go, oh yeah, I get it. Yeah. I know what this is. I just didn't know there was a name for it. And once you see it, and once you are attuned to it, you'll see it everywhere. And man, after this movie, I have started watching interviews differently. Well, I'm just keeping an eye out for the Barnum statements. And it's like they take them to school somewhere, sit them all down, and give them a list.
Oh, they make no mistake. They know exactly what they're doing, because they're like I said, they're unprovable, unfalsifiable statements. They're just so you can. It sounds so good, but you don't actually have to do anything. You know what I mean? Like, make America great again. That doesn't mean anything. So he doesn't actually have to do anything. If he says, I'm going to eliminate the income tax. I promise I'm going to eliminate the income tax. You can say at the end of 4 years, you didn't eliminate the income tax, like you said. Make America great again. This doesn't mean anything. It's just an emotional statement. It's a Barnum statement. So they are very aware when they write these speeches and give their talks. They're very aware of what they're doing. And especially a sleazebag like Gavin Newsom. I think he said in that one, he said, we're all better off, and we're all better on, was one of them. It's like, what? The other one was, it was something crazy like, you know, we can't move forward if we don't move together. I don't know. He just got just ridiculous statements. The guy after him was even worse. He's like, we're one American family, one American house. I don't remember what that guy said. The Georgia guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about Colin, what was it? Nobody should be left to stand alone in their fight. That's a Barnum statement. Nobody should be left to stand alone in their fight. Like, what fight? Where are they standing? What are you talking about? I mean, yeah. It just sounds really good, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
What gets measured gets managed. And our hope is that at some point, some politician is going to be running his mouth and somebody's going to go, sorry, that's a Barnum statement.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean anything.
You elaborate on that horse shit that you just tried to pass off as an answer.
I would love to do the Vivek Ramaswamy. Like, if I could find him at like Pork Fest or something, I wish I could just get up there and go, say that again, because he's good. He's a really Barnum statement-y kind of guy.
Oh, of course, yeah. It's and I think that one of the nice components of the movie that you did a great job with is. It's very important to listen to the answers that Natty Jones is giving, and then as soon as you go to the B-roll, it's going to be a compilation of examples of what he's saying. So it's not this disjointed group of little cutouts that you have from media appearances, things like that, that had gone on. It all makes sense, and you go point by point by point throughout the movie, and... on different topics, and then hammer it with that B-roll. Just show this, and so much of it, like we in what we do, we recognize these clips. We've seen them a ton, but when we did the premiere in Tempe, Arizona, the last of May, the audience in front of the live audience, I thought that was really important because I knew where I was laughing, and I understood some of the B-roll clips because I was familiar with them. I knew the context in which, but then I'm assuming that everyone else was going to know it. But there's a point there where like you kind of pucker up a little bit like, holy shit, like here comes a funny part. I hope they realize it's funny. And they did. Most definitely they did. It was like roaring laughter. I was so glad that happened because I knew it was going to be funny, but I thought for a second, maybe it's going to be too much of an inside joke where like, we know it's funny, but the rest of the people can't understand the context of it. But as soon as the first laugh came in, I was like, we're good. This audience gets it. So that's tough, man. Making a comedy is tricky especially when you're trying to make a mockumentary. So it's like half serious and half funny. And how do you walk that line?
Well, it also gets dark. The film gets very dark at one point, and then it kind of comes out of it. And I'd be honest with you, there was a point when we were watching. When it gets dark, when we start to get into degeneracy and the tranny psyop and everything, the audience is like kind of down, and then there was like a funny scene and they didn't laugh as much. And I was like, oh shit, I think I'm going to be getting some, this is going to be an interesting Q&A. I'm like, I think I lost them, but it wasn't like that at all. I think it was just, and this was the on purpose that I didn't care if you'd seen those clips before, because it was also the narrative was the clips themselves are a separate narrative. So it doesn't necessarily matter if you've seen the clips. In fact, if you've seen them, it's kind of a good thing in a way where, it was its own narrative. So it was just, I needed to have the clip that exemplified what he was saying the best that I could come up with quickly as I could without getting lost and searching. But the darkness, I thought, wow, these people are going to, I thought they were going to be pissed at me. I thought there's gonna be a lot more people that were pissed at me. And when we finally, the lights came up, people loved it. They seemed to really enjoy it. And there was a lot of, quote, normies in there. In fact, some of them that I knew, that I do know, and I was surprised. I thought they were going to hate it just because there's nobody is spared. So
nobody
is spared in the film. So yes.
If you're on the red team and you like to watch the blue team get their balls kicked in, you're going to like this, but then there's going to be a part where you're going to be crossing your legs.
Right. And the only people that have given me shit are, it's been like a few people really pissed at me that actually wrote me that, like, because I didn't hammer the Jews enough. I mean, I'm not joking. That's been like the main thing is I didn't hammer the Jews. And I'm like, nobody was spared. Did you not watch the film? Apparently you didn't see the first 2 minutes of the film.
There are plenty.
There's
of
There's a cut in there. I won't give it away, but I thought, wow, because I showed that to people here, and they're like, you better be careful with that cut. And I'm like, it's a good cut. I'm going to leave it in there. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It's a compilation of a variety of things, and it's boom, 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 and it's the news. That is, they must have forgotten by the time it got to the end. Maybe they thought it was going to be 90 minutes of just nothing but bashing Israel. It's like, no, Israel took it right in the nuts, as they should, but everybody else did as well. And so much of this I forgot too. Or the first time we watched it back, I was like, God, I forgot about this clip, this B-roll clip where, you know, somebody does something like, oh, that's so perfect that you put it in there. And then I started thinking, one of the tougher jobs that you were going to have had to have been to like whittle down what you use and what you don't use, because it could have been a 5-hour movie, of course, and nobody's going to sit through that. Unless it's Europa, then they'll sit through 10 hours of it. But
I've never seen that.
Oh, it's hardcore, man.
So you
took just the perfect clips. Like, I would see it and I'd go, I forgot about that one, and I'm so glad he put that one in there, because it just hammers home the point. And I maybe I'm just a little bit more predisposed to like it, because it kind of reminded me, the way it was cut, it kind of reminded me of my Octopus book, in the sense that it's text, and then there's a quote in there, and then there's more text, and then there's a quote in there. And the reason why the quote is where it is supposed to be is because I need it to hammer home my point about what I just got done talking about. And instead of me writing it out, here's an example of somebody else talking about the same point from a different angle that kind of proves what I'm saying. And I use that to bolster my case. And in the movie, it felt very comfortable to me, because here's Natty Jones talking about something, and then here comes the B-roll, which in my mind is like the quote coming in to just hammer it home and give you like a different perspective. I really liked the way you did this, man. I can't believe you did it for under $50,000. That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't that ridiculous? Well, I mean, it's sent me into basic bankruptcy.
Your time excluded from that, right? So I mean, like, how to quantify your time is tougher. But in terms of what you need to make a film, and I get it, they're cheaper to make now than they've been in the past, but still, like, you didn't.
I mean, there was like the last 2 or 3 weeks, because I knew we were screening and you guys are flying in, which is a good thing. I haven't been on a deadline like that in a long time. Like, I literally had to get up like 6-7 in the morning, go to the computer, and then work till like 12 to 14 hours. And I was running against the clock. Yeah. There was so much to do from the last 3 weeks. Yeah. I didn't know if people were going to like it. It's a really different kind of film. And like I said, I thought at the screening, at the premiere, it was pissing people off, but it really didn't. People were like, they got it, you know? Like I said, it gets very dark at a certain point. Let me come out of it. And when you come out of it, it's one of my things was I wanted to just overwhelm people. I wanted it to be fast and overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I also made a decision really early on to be really careful not to edit the clips. So I edit them down for time. I put in the beginning of the film, what do you call it? Not an announcement. Yeah, disclaimer. I put a disclaimer in the beginning, you know, that these are edited for time, some of them, but I didn't change anything about the clip. See, what you see is what happened. Because I could have, there were so many times where I could have done something funny or, you know, something here and there. And it might have worked in that moment, but it would have ruined the power of the film. You can't watch it unless you just are not ready to accept the reality. You can't watch this film and go, that's bullshit. Like, you can't, because there's no bullshit there. It's just, you can see it for your own eyes. You know, it's not like I just showed you. I mean, the only guy, some guy at the screening, he came and was like, I loved it. I just hated the back, the blue thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you don't understand. It's not, I understand. I used to be friends with cops. I know cops. It's not, it's the fact that we're showing that you can't have the government hire the cops and then they protect and serve you. They're going to work for who is paying them. Doesn't matter if there's a good cop here and there. It's the structure is off. You can't have people who get a lifetime pension from the government and fool yourself into believing that their first and foremost business is to protect you. It's not just not, that's just not human nature. That's not the incentive structure that we work under. So, you know, it's so there's, that's the only kind of thing people kind of miss big picture if they miss it, but you can't watch this and go, oh, you're just bullshit. You're bullshit editing. No, no, I didn't. You can see it right there. I didn't edit shit.
I think that if there's a normie in your life, you could probably get away with passing this film to them as a comedy, mockumentary comedy, not conspiracy related. Just send it over and let them watch it or watch it with them. And I think it would have, I think this is the way to get to people. I think the days of sitting somebody down and trying to give them a lecture, it's just, you know, there's.
Or even a documentary. I mean, documentaries, yeah, you can watch a documentary, but
I love documentaries too.
Me too.
You always have, but my first question whenever I'm watching a documentary is who financed this? Because who financed it to me is more important, because then, you know, because then you can see like the slant and everything and you go, oh, it's financed by the wrong people. So maybe I'll add my own little my variable to it and say, well, I believe 90% of it because it's financed by these guys and I don't trust these guys. So maybe there's some part of it. But when you're crowdfunded, there can't be an agenda. And the movie itself does such a, almost goes out of its way to specifically fuck with everybody. So you can't say that one team was left out of this. Everybody gets it.
I could have an agenda, but I tried to edit it in a way that you can't say that I had an agenda.
Yeah, I know you were very cognizant of that.
Yeah. If you take any, I mean, obviously I have an opinion, but sure. If you take any documentary, I wouldn't do this because I have integrity, but you can easily, I could make you believe anything in a documentary with editing. And so that's my problem with them. I can make you believe anything. If I had no integrity, I could prove anything in a documentary, but business and editor's game. But, so that was really important to me, you know, and I think we did a good job. There's a lot of times where I was really struggling with an edit, like, you know, what should I do with this? You know, the only one that I kind of did was the Kabuki Theater thing. I had that cross cut. But again, I didn't change anything in the footage, so.
I think it hammered home a point, because you go, oh, I know what this is. This is old Japanese theater. It's old, you know, it's the white face and it's the very specific movements. And you see that and you go, oh, yeah, well, wait a second. How's that any different than the theater I'm watching here? It's not Japanese, but maybe it's American television theater, but it's still the same stuff. And it's still being done a certain way, and there's still costumes and makeup that people are wearing, you know, they're pretending to be somebody that they're not. And I don't know. I thought, I'll tell you what, I don't want to give people homework or anything like that, but this, there are some movies out there that you will watch and you'll know pretty much by the end of it, shit, I'm going to need to watch that one again, because there's a lot going on. This is a good, I want people to watch it once, of course, but the truth is, I think it's a good double watch, you know, one where you watch it a second time, because now I've seen it a bunch, but I remember the third time I went through it, I caught something that I hadn't seen the first time. And I was like, God damn, man, I'm paying attention to this. Like I'm trying to make sure I'm getting everything that you buried in there. You're pretty good with Easter eggs and things like that. I feel like
that's my thing. I wear as Waldo stuff all over my films. Same with Jones Plantation. So it makes it fun. I like that when filmmakers do that. I like that the filmmakers that I love. So
Berwick and I have a seriously gigantic Easter egg on the cover of our Octopus book, or the cover of our Controlled Demolition book.
But really? I need to look closer.
We just, the entire cover itself is embedded, is augmented reality. And if you have the right program and you face shine it on the book cover, the whole book cover comes to life in your phone. It's crazy. So
really,
I'll have to show you sometime. It's one of those things. I have to stand there and physically show you on top of a copy of an actual book. But yeah, we built a couple a surprise in there. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I like that. I like that too. Your movies. It's a deep movie. I don't know anything about making movies. You know, it's not.
You know a little bit. You were in it. You did a great job.
Well, thank you. But I mean, I don't see it like a director sees it. There's some things, and I'm like this in real estate with my interior design partner. When she and I walk into a shitty house, she goes, that wall goes, this, we move there, we put cabinets there, we do this around there. And I just look at her and I go, if you say so, because I don't see it. I can't see it. And same with the directing on things. Luckily, yeah. You see it. Like, so how'd you get into filmmaking? Like, why this of all the things you be doing?
That's the $1 million question.
You must hate yourself.
what was I thinking? Dude, I had a pretty successful business in Atlanta. It's still there. And, I was, writing, I did some acting when I was young and I started writing a script and I had one of the valets was in film school. And I was telling him how I wanted to shoot the film, like a scenes. And he was like, oh man, you sound like a director. I didn't even really know what that was. I mean, I knew what a director was, but I didn't know shit. And then I believed him. So here I am. It's a long story short, but, I don't know, man. It's just the only thing I've ever done. Like you were saying with the interior decorating, that's one I always use. Cause I do not see that. I don't know. I cannot decorate. I can't even change oil, but I can filmmake. And I just was one of those things when as soon as I got into film school, I went to school because that was kind of the thing still at the time. Right. This is 2002. And it wasn't a joke. We didn't realize what a joke education was at that time. Plus, I remember now I'm in my mid-30s when I started this journey, so... It wasn't like I could just drop out and start, you know, gripping on a set for no money, you know, and waiting tables. Like that just really wasn't in the cards at that time in my life. But, it was the first time I did my first short film. And, again, I'm not where I want to be yet, even creatively, which is one of the things I love about this career is I'm constantly improving and getting better and learning new things. And every job is different. But it was the first time I ever, like, my film was, like, so much better than anybody else's film. I'm just being honest. Everybody knew that. It wasn't like I'm bragging. It just was obvious that, and my professor at the time, who became my friend, was like, dude, you got something. You're really good at this. And he, like, basically protected me because the people at the school did not like me. In fact, he told me that they had a big, like, a meeting with all the faculty. And somebody just said, Andrew Tregley is a real asshole. he said he's an asshole, but he's a really good filmmaker. They just hated me because I thought it was going to be this big artistic love fest. And also at the time I was a different person, like becoming a filmmaker. I had to pretty much change my consciousness. I know that sounds woo-woo. Like at the time I was very alpha male kind of, I mean, I still am, but like I was... just a different kind of person. I was very aggressive. You know, I would get in arguments with people in traffic and chase them down. And, right. You know, I just a lot of things have changed since then. I'm much more zen than I used to be. And so I was probably a bit of an asshole for them because it was like really hardcore leftists at that school. And I didn't know all this at the time. Like I said, I thought it was going to be this big love fest and creative. And my thesis film, I was about I play a pimp in my thesis film.
Uh-huh.
And I got inspired because I read Iceberg Slim's book, Pimp. You ever read that book?
I have not, no.
It's fantastic. Fantastic book. And I was like, I'm going to make this film. And so they brought in this critic. Her name's Felicia Feaster. I think she's still the biggest critic in Atlanta. And she's like, you know, critiquing everybody's. And she got to me and she's like, I am so disgusted with this screenplay. I'm so disgusted with you. I am offended. And she went off on me. I was like, damn, you know, I was just trying to make a short film. So I had a lot of animosity at me, but I don't know where I was going with this, but long story short. Yeah, so when I first started doing it, I just knew this is what I want to do. But I still haven't had the money to do really what I want to do. It's just such an expensive endeavor, you know?
I know. You've made two great films in spite of the budget, you know? Like,
yeah, I don't ask for much, man. I want a budget that they can make their money and I can do my thing. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's people out there who are... typically when you get to like movie finance guys, it's like people who've made their money somewhere else and then and just love films and want to... I wonder if that dude who owns the theater would be a good guy in the future. You know, the guy.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I need to send them a proposal. I want to make a video for them. I really like that place.
That guy's employees all said the best things about him. They were all so super stoked to work there. The screening we had was in Tempe, Arizona, and it was at this very unusual theater. It was a nice theater. It had like video games in the lobby, and then you go through and it's just like a traditional normal theater. But like the movies that were playing, like Star Wars was in one theater, and it's every movie's $3.50 to get into, and like $2.75 if you're a kid. And apparently it's just owned by some rich property developer in locally who loves films and has like all these statues in there, like film memorabilia, and it's just like a guy with a lot of money who geeked out and is like, I just want to make movies affordable for everyone. The whole thing was like a good vibe, like from the people that worked there. Remember the lady that was helping you get it all when we went and tested it the day before? She was like super professional and committed to making sure that it sounded perfectly and everything. I was just blown away by what was the name of that place?
It's called the Pollock Cinemas, Pollack, and the guy that owns it, he basically owns Tempe. He's a billionaire, my understanding, and he's a cinema buff, so he has that theater. He has the Guinness Book of World Records for the most, I don't know what you call them, like life-size models of film actors.
Yeah.
But also like characters.
Kind of like the wax figures, but different than that.
Yeah, they're I don't know what they call them, but he has a ton in the theater. Then apparently he's got a warehouse somewhere and they're just stacked. He's got something else, another like a museum or something. I want to meet him if he loves films, you know. I mean, what else are you gonna spend your $1 billion on?
No kidding. I mean that's really where you're gonna get money is from somebody who's, I mean, unless you go to Hollywood and do it that way, but that there's so many restrictions on it and you don't need to anymore. I feel like the barriers to entry have been lowered a bit where people can do a lot with the equipment that they've got. I mean, you've got, let's mention this since we've got you here, the generosity of the people who have helped out working on the movies, the unpaid people who lug cameras.
Well, you're one of them.
Move lights.
You're
around.
One of them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I didn't do anything compared to what some of the other guys did. I mean, there was a nice volunteer crew for. I didn't meet the Jones Plantation guys, but you know, on this one, I did.
Well, they got paid for Jones Plantation. Besides, there's a guy named Charlie Amsden, who's now a good friend. You met him. You were here. We all stayed here. He was a contributor to Jones Plantation, and then he contacted me and was like, man, I want to do something on set, I want to work. And he's like, I'll get myself to set, you don't have to pay me. I put him up, gave him room and board, and he ended up this is why it's smart to do things like this, you know. There's nothing wrong with buying your way into something, going to a conference, you know, doing the analog thing, because my DP is like, we need a guy to carry the rig, the DJI rig, because most of Jones Plantation was shot on a DJI rig. And Charles was the guy. He basically was like a human tripod for the whole movie. So he was literally in the middle of every scene and he just had a ball. And so this one, he contributed again and he ended up, I gave him production manager, but such a small crew, it didn't really, you know. But yeah, he was there shooting with us. He came on set. So it was me, him and Doug shot the film. And crazy. Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, it's hard to direct, you know, when I'm shooting and, you know, it's, I can't, it's, you know, when you're doing that many jobs, they all fall a little bit by the wayside. You know, like I made some really dumb decisions directing in a couple of the scenes where I'm like, it cost me time in the post production, but bothered me more as an artist. Like, dude, how did you miss that shot? You know, like, what am I doing? But I can't beat myself up because it was just like, I'm shooting and directing and designing the set and everything. It's just like,
and writing. And
we're in a hurry. And,
rewriting everything as well, too.
Now, Legal Man and I definitely worked closely together on that, and we wrote it back, we back and forthed it, and then we went on set, and then he wrote a lot, he edited a lot as he was acting, and then while we were shooting, you can hear it, I'd be like, oh, try this and say that, like we have a lot of ideas in that film that came as we were live doing the scene, and it was like an idea would pop up, you know, like the question assumes that they're even human, that these are even humans, people that you can, whatever, I don't remember what he says, but that whole thing came to us on set. You know?
That these are even people.
That you can reason with.
That you can reason with. And there's there's that good pause in there, and you're like, that they're people? Like, are we talking about reptilians, you know?
Like, yeah, right, that was the idea, was like, it could trick you, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he gets at the end, he goes, but they are, they do what they do. Convince a fish to stop swimming by reasoning with it? His performance, I think he upped his game from Jones Plantation. I know people are going to,
and he was like, great as Jones an actor, Plantation.
He improved.
He improved here. He was just he was the perfect amount of Yosemite Sam and then Jones Plantation. You know, there was a couple.
He's a goofball.
I say. You know, I mean, I was waiting for him. But two very different films.
Like, very,
period piece about slavery, which is a tough ass topic to tiptoe around in the 1860s, right? You've got that going on there, and then a modern day Hollywood rich guy producer, like they're, you know, mockumentary style, very different. You have a broad range of talents, and so does he, to be able to play.
Which one would you watch first?
Characters. It's easier to watch Barnum World first.
Okay. Why?
It's easy. It's just because it's modern. You're already in it. You can slip in and out of it. You could watch 2/3 of it, have to pause it, go eat dinner with your family, come back and watch the next 1/3 of it. You know what I mean? And it won't break up the continuity too much. Jones Plantation is like, you got to watch that on the big screen, on the couch, block out 2 hours. We're sitting down watching it. We're not answering the phone. We're just focused.
It's
on
a
that.
Film. It's a narrative fiction.
It's a
film. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I say like Jones Plantation is pure Colombian cocaine and Barnum World is really good crack. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, for sure. You're going to be feeling a bit schizo after Barnum World. But again, it's just reflecting reality right back to us. It's not that you're saying that this world is out there or your belief is that you're injecting this. You're just saying, no, here it is. Remember, this part of the world exists too. This crazy batshit nutso stuff that the government's doing and the bombs that they're dropping. Like, I get it. It doesn't, if you don't turn on the TV or your computer, driving down through your neighborhood, you never see this, but like, here's a reminder that horrible shit is going on out there and that there are people who are responsible for making it happen. And some of them are like Natty Jones, you know, some of them are like players in it. And, it's
all totally unnecessary too. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, it's totally unnecessary. I think the same thing. I think that like, in fact, not only is it unnecessary, but like, just do nothing. Like, you're actively going out of your way to make the world a terrible place, these people.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying go be a good guy. I'm saying just do nothing. That would be a victory.
If we didn't have the state, these people would be, you know, they would be mowing your yard. They'd be cleaning their toilets at your kid's school. You know, they'd be picking up your tray at the diner when you're done eating. But now, because we have these control systems, this is where these people flourish. Because they're just low life, criminal, degenerate liars and murderers and pedophiles. I mean, it's the worst people among us to take these jobs. You think you live in a free country when you actually live in a control system that's designed to extort you and control your life. And the reason why you think you live in a free country is because of people like Natty Jones, who use propaganda to brainwash, mind control, and socially engineer you into believing that you exist in something that doesn't exist. And so that's a very painful thing to have to face.
Yes.
After a lifetime of being told something else, that you've been duped in your ego. And he says in the film, it's an ego thing. Your ego won't allow you to see the truth. But once you allow yourself to see the truth, it's a freeing thing. It's also puts you in a much better position to protect yourself.
He's a bit of a philosopher in this as well. I mean, it's just a ton of experience that this character has over the years of manipulating people and maybe or maybe not working on political campaigns and being part of this mechanism that convinces people that, as he describes it, that we have the greatest freedom machine ever created. And that's what a lot of people think that this is, and that it's just, they've got these terms, freedom, and they see a flag whenever they hear the words, and you break that down, and it's like we've all been psychologically conditioned. There's a flag in the corner of the classroom, and we stand up in the morning and we pledge allegiance to the flag, and there's a globe over there, and now I start having questions about the shape of the earth because it's right next to that mandatory flag, you know, and the mandatory globe. So I start going, wait a second, you know, and we're so manipulated, and it would be infinitely easier to just not admit it and just pretend like none of this is actually happening. But as you say, if you can put your ego aside and recognize that you've been fooled, you've been duped by people that are professionals at making you believe things that aren't true, then you either have a choice of living the lie, continuing on with the lie, or getting so pissed off that you want to make sure that nobody is able to fool you again. And you start digging into this stuff. I mean, that kind of was on my journey of things was, in the end, people were like, well, what did it to? It was like, I was tired of being an idiot and not understanding how the three card Monty game works and falling into these traps and being the last guy to buy stocks and the .com stuff and being the, you know, and overextending myself with houses during the boom and all that stuff. And it's like, I'm a reasonably smart guy and I keep stepping in these bear traps. Like how, you know, so like you have to kind of humble yourself and say, like, I've made some mistakes. I've done things the wrong way, but like, I need to figure this out. And if you're willing to do that and like take a look at the world for what it is, then I think somebody like, I think then you could connect with somebody like Natty Jones for being upfront and being honest and laying it all out. But there's so few people he knows in that character. Knows, I could tell you exactly how it works. You're not going to do anything about it. You're certainly not going to stop it. You're still going to fall into the traps. So what's the point? You know, I guess it's at some point he's his big confessional, his big tell-all, you know, absolves him of his sins, right?
I mean, he says in the film, you know, there's a couple different things that you were touching upon, but the one thing he says is, you know, hey, look, if you want to keep believing in a fairy tale that a long time ago, a group of powerful rich men wearing knickers and powdered wigs created a freedom machine that's now controlled by we the people and our sacred vote, knock yourself out. I'm going to keep living the high life, and you're going to keep paying for it. So thank you for your service. You remember that line?
Yeah.
And then he talks about the system. He's like, you keep assuming that the system's not working. You know, the system is working fine. He's like, how do you know what a system is designed to do? Well, it's what is the system doing? But it's easy. People just can't accept that. And I know how they feel, because when I went through that, it was like losing a girlfriend when I was like faced with reality of the situation I'm in. I mean, it was depressing. I was, for like a week, it was a bummer. You know, I used to be like really hardcore. Like I would want to fight you if you would, you know, talk down about America and the freedom machine and everything. You know what I mean? It's like, how dare you? And once you start seeing it for what it is, and it's gotten easier to see. I mean, it wasn't easy to see in the 80s and 90s, but it is now.
Right.
It's depressing. It is, but it's also way better on the other side, in my humble opinion.
I agree. I always think of a symbol since we were screening this in Arizona, and I think of a guy who got totally bought into the system and got completely duped. I think of Pat Tillman, you know?
Yeah.
And how, what he represents as a gung-ho, fuck yeah, America first, let's get these guys, what they did to us. I'll give up my professional football career with the Arizona Cardinals after a college career at Arizona State. And I'm going to join the Marines and I forget, or maybe it was Army. I'm not sure.
I don't know, but I know what you're talking about.
He was one of Marines or Army and go into Afghanistan. And then there's major questions about his death. Apparently he came back on leave and was talking about how it wasn't quite what he thought it was going to be and how the war was some bullshit and things like that. And next thing you know, he winds up dead. You just think like, that guy could have been anything he wanted to be. And he bought into the sales pitch so fully. And he was held up as a symbol of like America, like, you know,
why you should join up.
The guy, like the guy running with the flag and the hair blowing and everything. People see him and go, holy shit, that's like Mr. America. And he gets murdered there over lies and they cover it up and they're disrespectful to his parents. And it's like, what a perfect encapsulation of this America freedom machine. You give up your entire life to join it. And what does it do? It gets you killed by your own guys, lies about it, and disrespects your parents all on top of it. Congratulations, America. Fuck yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He was and that's many such cases. Any of these countries around the world, they're all basically run the same way. We're just the biggest one, right? As far as the government goes, they're all like that. They all dupe young, great men with courage and integrity into believing they're fighting for some noble cause. And that guy was like a really handsome, strong, athletic, intelligent guy, just wasted for these fucking scumbags, these bug men. They couldn't fight their way out of a paper bag if they were. I mean, you saw these dirt bags and the fake insurrection January 16th crawling around the floor like the fucking pieces of shit that they are.
With the gas masks on and everything. Oh,
man, I'll tell you. Double tap, every one of them.
Yep, they're all a bunch of traitors. This is from time to time though we get these images that are perfect, you know, like the idea of those politicians on the floor with their gas masks, and then they've got the Aussie quote, the war pigs quote, like on the meme
underneath the war pigs crawl
written in there, and you just go, yeah, exactly. That's how these people should feel every single day of their lives. For
That's
their
right.
behavior, for what they've done, they should be scared of the general public always and forever. And if they're, because if they're doing their job correctly, they've got nothing to worry about.
That's the problem with democracy, is that there's no accountability, at least with some sort of a king kind of thing. You can go, okay, that's the guy. If there's a problem, he's responsible. I don't want any of these things, but I'd prefer a benevolent dictator to this horseshit, because this is where you get all these just sniveling, lying, weak men and women, you know, pointing the finger at each other and constantly running. I'm a senator now. I'm a congressman. I mean, I've thought about this a lot. How successful I could be if I was a bad actor like these people. I could come out as like this, like right wing pro constitution guy. I'd never have to work again. I could get elected, you know, and I could have some sort of like, you know, my arch rival, some left winger in Arizona or something. And every once in a while I could throw the crowd a bone by like, you know, outlawing trans athletes in the bathroom. Like that should be even need to be a law. Like, you know, the fact that that's even talked about is so absurd. But you know, and just talk about the constitution and, you know what I mean? The thing I'd never have to work again. I could have all the money I wanted and just, but I just can't, you
can't
know, I'm like you. We just can't do it. Yeah.
I can't do it. It's so fun to mock those people too. You know, they're so transparently full of shit, but I don't know. I got to live with myself. You know what I mean? I'm fully prepared to get things wrong. I'll get things wrong for sure.
Right.
But
for sure.
Like, if you're paid to get them wrong, that's a problem. Or if you're just so far up your own ass that you've got a giant blind spot and you just keep getting that one thing wrong over and over again. I don't know, man. I mean,
you have to be a bad actor. You have to be a liar.
You have to.
That's the only way. Yeah. You know, it's the whole system is that Michael Chertoff used to be the head of Homeland Security. Homeland Insecurity. His company was the company that brought in all those detection machines at airports, the ones that we do now, the where they. So that's how this works. That's all this is. He's got the job. He can make, you know, whatever he wants to happen within that context. And so he just had his company create these machines, require them. It's just like the big business working with the guys with the guns in government to create laws to benefit themselves at your expense.
As soon as he got done doing that, he was the guy that freed the dancing Israelis from jail and sent them back to Israel.
I didn't know that part. See, I'm telling you, you know more about this stuff than I do. I didn't know that.
Dual citizen, did Michael Chertoff. Yeah.
Yeah, dual citizen. Dual citizen.
Yeah.
Of our best ally in the Middle East.
Our most favorite. They're a trusted ally. That's a Barnum statement.
Very, very, very trusted ally. Yeah.
Let's wrap this up. Where can people find you? Oh, Maverick and the Machine, your new podcast. Let's talk about that and tell everybody where they can find you and where they can support your work and where they can kind of get in your orbit so that I'm assuming there's going to be a third movie. If people want to be involved in that in some way, shape, or form, it's good for them to know how to find you.
You could go to jonesplantationfilm.com and watch Jones Plantation. I've got a 2 to 5 year plan with that. I mean, it's been a much bigger success than I was even expecting, but I still want to break that into the mainstream somehow. So we're still working on that actually. And, cause most people by and large have not seen the film, you know, everybody in our sphere has.
And there's no expiration date on that film either. It's not one of those films that's going to go,
it's timeless.
Yeah. It's timeless because it's a period piece and the humor in it isn't tied to any modern point of reference, so it all kind of works. Whether you watch it,
well, they
now
can see that in
any years from now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they can see that in any of the like major streaming platforms, but it's also at JonesPlantationFilm.com, and then they can go to watch Barnum World on pretty much any of the platforms. My YouTube channel is at Drew Media TV for now. That's still going. So
I'll put the link in the show notes so that everybody can find
it. Okay, cool.
Just scroll down. Do that.
And I have a podcast called Maverick and the Machine. You were my first guest. We just dropped the one with James Corbett. I've interviewed Jason Kristoff, Doc Kaufman, even though YouTube pulled that one down.
Nice.
Larkin Rose. I just finished today with Marjorie Wildcraft. I'm really excited about that interview. So everybody check it out. It's on like all the podcast platforms and it's on my YouTube channel. And I do a Rumble. It's getting bigger, but I just did it to back myself up, which I'm glad I did because, like I said, they pulled the Kaufman interview down. But there is a Rumble channel at Drew Media as well. So, and that's about it as far as I can think of. And they can follow me on Twitter. I'm giving you a lot of links and stuff here, probably too many. But at Tregsman, 2 G's and an S.
Yeah.
And we're going to do something soon. The idea of these films, first and foremost, is to make them entertaining and engaging. And then the pro-human freedom stuff that we put in there, the seeing the world for what it is stuff, that's kind of more subtle, although Barnum World's pretty in your face, but it's done in a way that's comical. But Jones Plantation is more subtle, but even more so as we move forward, we've talked about some films, Crazy Eddie and such. So
there's no shortage of stories that need to be told. And like you said, first and foremost, the movie's got to be great on its own.
That's right.
Messages aside. And it is. Barnum World definitely delivers. I think people will like it. It is the mockumentary to end all documentaries. So
it's a Barnum World, baby.
Yes, it is. It's a Barnum World. That's Drew Treglia. If you want to, I'll just scroll down and find it and take a look. The link will be down in the show notes. Go check out Barnum World. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the place to do that. Please go to Activist Post daily and check it out. Outstanding articles there. Just go ahead and bookmark that. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.